This episode is sponsored by Smart Travel, a new podcast from NerdWallet. You know that one friend who always finds the best travel deals, picks the right cards, and somehow ends up in first class for the price of coach? Smart Travel is like that friend, but in podcast form. They cover all things travel finance, like which flight deals are actually worth booking and which are just clickbait, and how to plan group trips without blowing your budget or testing your friendships in the process. Travel smarter and spend less with the help of NerdWallet. Follow Smart Travel wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a Voyascape podcast. You can find all of our travel podcasts from around the world at voyascape.com.
One thing that comes up a lot in the travel space is the idea of giving back. Most of us want our trips to mean something beyond just visiting a place, and volunteerism is often presented to us as a way to do that. At first glance, it does sound really positive. Helping while you travel can feel really meaningful, but over the years, researchers and child protection advocates have raised serious concerns about some forms of volunteerism, especially those involving children. Back in 2019, I interviewed the founders of No White Saviors, which is an organization in Uganda that is focused on challenging white saviorism. And something they said to me in that interview stuck with me ever since. Good intentions are not good enough. Even though I haven't participated in volunteerism myself, the idea really shifted how I think about my travel decisions. We can mean well, but that doesn't always mean our presence in a place is genuinely helpful. I think this raises an important question. Who is volunteerism actually designed to serve? Here to discuss is Davy Sutton, a multi-Emmy award-winning journalist who you may have seen on major national talk and morning news shows. She's also the author of a recent article on this topic titled Stop Visiting Orphanages, the Feel-Good Travel Trend That's Hurting Kids. This is Curious Tourism, the podcast focused on making travel better for people and the planet. I'm Erin Hines, travel writer and content creator, and I'm joined by my producer, Katie Lohr.
If you enjoy this show, Erin and I would love you to support it. It's really easy to do so. First, you can double check that you're actually subscribed to this show on your favorite podcast app. And second, if you end up loving this episode, please be sure to share it with a friend, a fellow traveler, or somewhere on the internet.
You can also get in touch with us directly on social media or by email. All our contact info is in the show notes. Welcome back to the show, Davy. Thanks for coming.
Yeah, happy to be back.
Yes, and we have an intense topic to discuss today. It's one that I will tell you, I find is probably the most controversial, like of all the things that I've talked about, especially on social media. I'm sure you know as well from being online, like people get very defensive about volunteerism. So I'm excited to talk about it with you today.
Yeah, I'm excited. I think before we really dig in, it's because when you kind of tell the people that there's a problem with it, their intentions initially are like, wait, I'm trying to do good. I thought I researched things and hold up, you don't know everything.
I know. Yeah. We're going to get into this, but I wanted to start by just talking about what volunteerism really means and what it is, because I hear it used like in a lot of different contexts.
Yeah, I think overall, it was an evolution of missionary trips that religious people took to non-religious people actually wanting to participate and mixing sometimes their leisure travel, either like doing some volunteering before and then enjoying a destination leisurely or reversing it and doing it on the back end and volunteering. But basically this industry formed where it catered to travelers specifically who wanted to use their PTO or vacation time to go and volunteer instead of just consuming travel.
So we're going to talk a lot about orphanage tourism today, but there's some other common types of volunteerism. What would you say are like the most common ones that you tend to see people doing?
Absolutely. I even talked to somebody yesterday who was going to build houses, build schools. Sometimes it even comes into the form of teaching English for a week And then, of course, a very popular one is volunteering at orphanages.
I'll actually share an anecdote about one of the first times that, like, I saw it in real life and was bothered by it. It was when I arrived in New Orleans, flying from Canada, like I landed in the airport, and there were all these people going through security wearing t-shirts saying that they were going to go build houses in, I think it was somewhere in Central America. So these were like people from New Orleans, white people, religious white people, getting on a flight to go south to build houses. And this wasn't long after Katrina. So I was just like, the irony here is so intense. Like, literally, there are people in your community who need homes built, and you are paying money to fly to another country to do this. Like, I'll never unsee it. Like, I couldn't believe what I was seeing.
The juxtaposition of that specific story, just kind of like in their face, like there's people here that needs help, is kind of also a glaring issue of some of the people who will pay to volunteer someplace. And that kind of gets into like socioeconomic issues. Well, like, it is still a luxury and a leisure to like go volunteer your time somewhere. And I think that's where, like, I have friends who sincerely, they're like, I've been given a lot. I'm doing really well in life, and I want to give my time to somebody. I know somebody who spent a time in an orphanage in Ghana, so I want to do that same program next. And everything seemed ethical when they did it. In fact, they're doing it again. So I almost was in participation of this right before the pandemic because of that exact story. That is the exact story. One of my really good friends, who is a senior media member at one of the legacy networks, and one of her anchors, her TV presenters, had finished a trip volunteering in Ghana. And she found out that he did that annually after he did it, and he would do it on his own. And he wasn't publicizing it. So all of his intentions are well. And I can't really speak to that particular program, whether it was good or not. But I think what we'll address today is the overall fundamental issues with this kind of travel.
Mm-hmm. So I want to lean into the intention part of it, because I'll actually tie this back to one of our first episodes that we ever did on this show. We interviewed the founders of No White Saviors, which was an advocacy campaign and organization that launched in 2018 by a team of mostly East African women to challenge saviorism in the charity aid and missionary sectors. And something that they said to me in that interview, which I have never forgotten, it's like fundamentally changed how I view travel and volunteerism. They said, good intentions are not good enough. And I think this applies to like most areas of travel, but it really, really applies to volunteerism. As you already alluded to, many people see volunteerism as something positive. How could there possibly be something wrong with giving back while you travel? But when we step back and really look at it, it does raise this important question of like, does the intention match the impact? So I wanted to ask you, who does volunteerism really serve? Like, who is it designed to serve?
Right. And it is designed to serve the traveler. And the industry was built up robustly around that, and specifically orphanage tourism, from the comfort of them to their arrival to their journey to the little schoolhouse that they might be, you know, spending the weekend. We just also want to be clear when we're talking about the voluntourism orphanages that we're not talking about the institutions where the children who have already experienced this trauma of being separated from their families and are living and in the hopes of being adopted one day, because the only visitors that they're really getting are potential people to take them back home or people to foster or adopt them. I'm specifically talking about orphanages that are set up for visitors to visit them on a weekly basis and for volunteer and travel purposes. And it really is designed to serve the traveler's desire to feel impactful. So we can actually even argue that there are two victims here, right? Because it is the unassuming traveler who thinks that they're doing well, even though hopefully we are equipping them with some resources on just digging a little deeper to understand, you know, the basis of how this industry kind of bloomed, and then ethical ways, if there are, on how to find places to, what to do to give back. When you look on the programs and the itineraries and what you'll be involved, it very much is framed like a group tour that you might book just purely for leisure travel, with some moments of making you feel good, and then you can leave after the week.
So let's talk specifically about orphanage tourism now. I don't think I've ever encountered it myself, but I know you mentioned that it takes place in a few of the countries that I have been to, Nepal being one of them. So could you explain exactly what it is and how it fits into the broader voluntourism industry?
Orphanage visits are one of the most popular, sellable experiences in the voluntourism sector. And it treats the vulnerable children as tourist attractions driven by tourist dollars. And I know people don't like it said plainly, but now it's time to like really unpack it, because there have been studies that have been done for these different programs. And when you pull back the layers, it is absolutely grotesque. The industry turns childcare into a business model driven purely by tourism dollars. The reason that most of these orphanages are built nowadays in specific destinations is for a Western tourist. They found out that Western tourists want it, so they built more. And just building a building isn't good enough. You have to have children. And probably the most dreadful thing is that research shows that 80% of the children in orphanages globally actually have at least one livable parent. This is created when families are actually tricked or incentivized by recruiters to give up their children, and they're lied to. Oftentimes, these places are in developing countries, and the parents are tricked into giving their children with the hopes of a better education and sending them to school when they're actually going to an orphanage for show. But it gets even more grotesque, because to pull on the heartstrings of Western tourists who are going to come and volunteer for the week or 2 weeks, it has to look like dire conditions. So in addition, from these kids being pulled from their families to live in these orphanage bunk beds and situations, not really having schooling, they have to also kind of look like they're in extremely poor. And a lot of times they are extremely poor, but they're not in a situation that's even better. Whereas you would think, if these orphanages are making good money from the volunteers who actually are paying to volunteer most of the time, you would think that they would have better conditions, but they have to keep up the ruse, the disguise, so that they can pull on the heartstrings. And so this is the circle that is created in this industry.
Where in the world is this happening the most?
Well, the research shows that 80% of children that are in orphanages around the world, most of these orphanages are not legit. So this is literally worldwide, from Vietnam to Nepal to countries in Africa and in South America. In Guatemala, there are orphanages. So I would just say, be aware anytime for this type of tourism anyways. A real sticking point is, yes, want to help the most vulnerable and the children, but if fundamentally these places are not helping them, then this is an option for us to volunteer in this particular way.
And it sounds like so exploitative, because instead of supporting families so that they can stay together, the system is designed to just separate them and make the parents think that they're giving their children an opportunity where it sounds like realistically those children don't have any further opportunity from ending up in one of these orphanages. They're probably worse off overall.
Yeah. So that's what it's showing, that the children are ending up worse off. But even emotionally, these are young, vulnerable children. And you'll see some of the videos of online of some of the volunteers, and they're connecting with the children, and then they gallivant off and they're away. And imagine that child stays, but every week there's a new person that they fall in love with. So this is creating attachment disorders. So whatever issues they had before by being disadvantaged, disenfranchised, whatever their country that they're in. There was a study done in Haiti where it was even more grotesque, that children were being stolen, trafficked, which if you send your child away to this kind of institution, of course they are so vulnerable to being trafficked. And it is also playing into that white savior mentality, because you'll see some of the content that is coming out of these, and they are coming in. It's mostly young people. They have good hearts. They've been told at home. They've watched videos. They're really excited to come in and do their part. But what's happening is after their week or after their 2 weeks, this kid is left and they bonded with you. And I can tear up on this because we can remember ourselves as a kid. And let's say we spent the week or two or summer with our grandmother or our aunt, and our heart is broken because we had this very special moment. They were playing with us. They were getting to know us. We colored something together. This is happening to the children over and over. So that is a long lasting impact, because they're seeing some of these children grow up and they have attachment disorders and other mental health and physical health issues as a result of being a part of this experience.
Yeah, there's like zero stability in their life, because it's just like a constant cycle of different people coming in and showing them love and then leaving. It's horrible. You mentioned the white savior complex. Let's like explain what that is, because I think some people may not have heard the term, and it's important to unpack it. So do you want to describe what the white savior complex is?
First of all, you can read about it, but they really don't teach it in Western schools, right? But when you travel, you can actually discover it on your own by the framing of all the stories that were ever told to us. And that's why people call it propaganda, even our movies, right? Like if we just think of like Captain America, if you pull out from just like watching it just for entertainment purposes, you're like, wait, first of all, it's centered the USA. This one white guy who was buried in the snow for ages is the only one who can come and save the day. So all of these messages are really given to us as Westerners constantly in every situation, from reading books, watching media, the way we present our news. So that is the foundation. And a lot of people would have grace for not being able to see beyond that gaze. But with that, the white savior complex is basically only we can save the day. So, you know, I don't know how deep we want to get into geopolitical issues, but you see that going on right now with the US, of like, there's a problem with the way other rulers are handling their business, but only the US can go in and save the day. And so putting that down to like an individual level, the arrogance or audacity to think that only you from New Orleans can go to South America with your purple shirts to build whatever they were going to build on their mission trip. And it's only you that is going to make the impact. And the impact would not happen without you. Whereas, you know, one of the solutions is that you can actually empower that community. And if you have extra money to give by buying this volunteer trip, maybe you can donate it to an organization on the ground there that is giving jobs for the community. Because one of the other mishaps that happens that is problematic with volunteerism overall is like a skills mismatch, right? Like short-term volunteers, they might say, come teach English for a week, but you're not an English teacher. But there could be local people there that could be empowered to be the teachers, right? And then also sustainability. Like sometimes they're also finding like some of these projects that are poorly built by people who are not carpenters, they just leave it and it's an abandoned building. It's not up to code, right? Or if we're painting a building on the side, that might be fine. But then the next day, the real painters will come out and clean the work, you know, finish the edges and clean the work, right? But they had us paint just this one wall and we could take our pictures. And I was unknowingly put in that position when I went to Guatemala one time because the owner of the hotel properties had these projects that they supported, and then their guest wanted to go and see how they could support. So we did a very superficial painting on the side, took our picture. Here's the paint. They sit and watch you. And then the next day they'll go and finish the project. So it was a real project, but we did enough where we didn't ruin the project. And then they carried on, right? And that was kind of like a hybrid kind of, we weren't doing any destruction or damage. We went to go see the nonprofit and foundation and how this, you know, wealthy business owner who owned these nice hotels. She was Guatemalan, so she really did care about the community. And then we saw the village that they actually helped, and then painted our little stripes, and then went our way. So that one is one of those things that, like, I was like, okay, what am I doing? Okay, fine, I'll take the picture. But I knew no harm was being done, but I also knew I wasn't really helping, right? The power dynamics, back circling back to the saviorism complex and framing the local communities as passive victims rather than partners.
Yeah, it has like a very colonial undertone to it.
Sorry, I have to just say, Davey, your story reminds me so much. Just thinking back to my high school experience, there was always a cohort of kids who got selected to go on these trips every year, one of them being Ghana and another one being New Orleans right after Katrina. And they were there as a cohort of students who were there to, like, build houses and build schools. And I just think about, like, these schools being built by high school students. Like, there's no way.
There's no way. And who have to be told to clean their room when they get home, and their mom is still checking if they wash their hands after they go to the restroom.
Yeah, like, there's no way a group of 14 to 18 year olds are building solid structures for people abroad.
It's fun to laugh at that now, because we need to pull all of this stuff to the surface so that when people are considering, like, well, how can I make an impact? I'm doing really well. I've been really blessed. I've been successful in my job. I want to make an impact. And then when you just talk about these little fluffy things, yeah, let's laugh at it so that we know that's not the way, right? Like sending your kid to do that when they can actually probably do something more impactful, because there are programs where you can go in and teach abroad and make an impact. If you stay a while, like, are you staying a couple years, then you can actually make an impact in that community with your knowledge. But you also have to be very aware of that saviorism complex. So then if you have some of these tools, you'll be able to know how to navigate what you can do to help empower people without taking the credit of, like, it could only be done because I'm here. And when you initially center that community, you're already going in with a positioning of respect and honor, because you're going to ask about their customs. You're going to ask about when they have their meals, or if there's a specific prayer time or quiet period, or if this country practices siestas, or is it a sacred holiday? This is where you start from. And then the other way of centering them is thinking about, like, okay, do they even have a desire for this? Because sometimes you'll even see the place when you see some of these, like, tourism projects, and you see when I look at people's faces and they're, like, mailing it in for the check, and you're like, I don't even know if they're getting any, like, if they like this, or if this is even helpful, or if this is even a real thing to them, right? I even think about that when some of the villages I visited before. I remember going to Indonesia, like, in 2016 or 17. And by that time I had been to, like, indigenous villages before. And it really struck me that we get to go and meet them, because I truly believe the part of traveling is culture sharing. And so they're just as curious as of us as we are of them. So even though it was like one of those day stop at the villages, and they're going to share with you some of their traditions and their dances and their food and how they practice their ways, I think you can make an ethical attempt. And by that time, I remember very specifically the kids. I love children, so I feel like I'm like the children whisperer. So the kids were coming up to me and they were asking to take a picture with my iPhone. But by this time, I had known that I will get the picture and they wouldn't. So I started bringing one of those print out. I don't want to name the brand. So, but there's a couple of brands where like you take the picture and then it comes out and you can leave it with them. And I really felt like so happy to like, I shared a moment with this child. They took a picture and they were so cute. They were leaning on me and it was for my own personal use, you know, like my own personal memories, because like I played with them for like 30 minutes and we had fun. And I left them with a picture of this person, me, and I was able to leave them with something too. So just, I feel like if you center the community initially, even if you're in situations that might not all the way be kind of like the most ideal with the knowledge of how we know to move through the world. And the tourism industry was built based off of colonial methods, right? Like we get to go into a destination and use those resources and then leave. And it was comfortable and we can give it 5 stars, right? So that's kind of like the systems that we're in. So I do think that if we change our mindset and know this checklist of how to operate within the system, then we are doing our best to do it in the best way that we can.
Mm-hmm. I love your story about the camera, because that's something I've started doing recently, just with my Sony camera, like taking photos and sending them to the communities. This happened when I was in Guanayala in Panama recently. Like my guide, as we were doing a walking tour, like through his community, he said to me, like, I don't have photos like with some of these people and I would like to have some. Can you take photos and send them? I haven't shared these on my social media. I took these photos for him and I sent them to him directly. And I feel like this is one of those like skilled versus unskilled things. It's like, I am a photographer. I have good equipment. This is something I can do for people that they might not always have access to. And so it's something that I like to offer, but it's not this like pre-programmed like tour that I've joined to like volunteer my time. I think a lot of the time, like we can contribute through little actions that don't need to be these like prepaid for tours. And they should always be rooted in like what our actual skills are versus like trying to pretend we know how to build a house. And even like, I was thinking about it in the context of orphanage tourism, because this has always been my discomfort with like those kinds of experiences. Like, of course, every person loves children. I love children, but I don't have any education in how to be with children, to teach children, how to educate them. Like, I don't know this stuff. And like, if I'm in Nepal and invited to this orphanage to hang out with these kids, I don't speak their language. Like, what can I really give them? Not really anything. That's always been like a point of discomfort for me with like, especially when children are involved, because it's like, there's not much that I can contribute to those children's lives that's going to have an actual impact.
It even goes even deeper, right? Like, because it goes into like culture. We go in with like our t-shirts and our Western wear, but what if we're in a really conservative place? So like, even though they're young children, they're used to everybody being covered up. So like, we're exposing them to something that is not what their everyday culture is. But if they're stuck in these orphanages, they're always seeing these Western people showing their skin. It's hot, it's humid here, even though like all of their people are covered up in their appropriate wear for that kind of situation. We're having tank tops on and flipping our hair and doing, you know, I think it goes, it just is so layered. And then also like there are organizations where like to support children from disadvantaged situations and communities, you can find the ones that focus on keeping families together instead of institutionalizing the children. And that is a possibility. So like, if children are your heart and you really want to do something for the disenfranchised around the world, this is what it can be. And yes, it's like what you said. It's like, there are many people who love children. Your heart breaks when you see what they're going through. And the white savior complex is we're like, well, I just need to go there and do what I can, even if it's just for a week. But there is core trauma that happens that affects the child's sense of identity and belonging. And then they can feel rejected as well because you leave and they might say, I wasn't good. They might be confused. Like there's that language barrier as well. So they might be like, here's another one who seemed to love me, but they didn't stay. And no one is probably explaining that to them. I wonder if the children are even given pictures of who's coming, but the volunteers are given pictures of who they might see. And so it's just a one-way street. And the entire industry, it is built because Westerners wanted it. And that's the reason for us being allowed to go in and see children. But when we think about it in our Western cultures, in our world, in our neighborhoods, in our communities, we don't just have people coming into the daycare. And we don't have an orphanage system here. Or I don't think you guys have that in Canada, an institutionalized orphanage system anymore. Yeah, like it would just be weird to just have strangers continually to go and see children while they're doing circle time and learning their colors and stuff.
That would literally never fly in North America.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like in North America, like you need to have some sort of certification to be spending time with children that aren't your own. Like. What you're pointing to is like the reason this exists is because there's demand for it. And I think travelers need to recognize that the choices we make drive demand. And it's one of the levers that we have to make the tourism industry better by saying no to things like this, to parts of the tourism industry that are unethical. You're making a statement. You're telling them, I don't want this. And then it starts to shift. And so I think like people need to really absorb that information because like it might seem like not a big deal that like you're participating one time in this, but it actually is.
I remember even just, this goes kind of back to like the point of view and I hate to say like the white savior complex again, but it was really disturbing when I went to the Dominican Republic one time and we took a tour through a village and I didn't know what it was that it was. It was like human safari. But my friend, I think, knew and she's from East Africa. So she opted out. And then she was like, oh, yeah, I didn't want to go on a human safari. But the disturbing part that I witnessed was there were these Canadians on board who, as we were passing some of the kids who are beautiful children and they have mothers and fathers, we were just passing through a village in kind of like a Jeep truck, a 4x4. They made the remarks of like, oh, they're so cute. I want to take them. Oh. And I just remember feeling so uncomfortable inside because it's that point of view of like, they're so cute. I'm seeing them here, I just can take them. Whereas when we leave, they're going back home to their families who really love them and who they belong to. And there was nothing wrong with the way that they were living. They were just showing us something outside of the resort of how locals were living. And the Dominican Republic is a very tropical place. So it was showing us like how they can get their food from the land and all that stuff. But instead, that was the gaze that those travelers had. And so that is the compounding effect of all the stuff that we talked about from the media that, you know, going back to like the media that we consume. And we talked about this a little bit last time about like passport privilege. We have our navy blue passports that allow us access to the world. And so we're moving about the world as if we own it and as if our point of view and our gaze is correct and that everybody else needs our help.
We've touched on it a little bit, but I think it's worth spending a minute on just the privacy issues around these visits to orphanages and just like engaging with children at all. I witnessed this on my recent trip to Panama, just people who are like far too comfortable whipping out their camera and taking photos of a child that they've just like interacted with or even not interacted with. I literally saw a white guy in Panama City like take a picture of these kids just like playing on the street, like got right in their face and took their picture, had not spoken a single word to these children and just like turned around and walked off. It will never not blow my mind how comfortable people are with doing this. Let's talk a bit about like why photography and social media and like why it's so important that we're cognizant of like the dignity of these children and their right to privacy, because like they're not old enough to consent to having their photo taken, let alone distributed online. It's something you see a lot like in the orphanage tourism space and the voluntourism space in general. So I'm just curious what you have to say about it.
I think the question people need to ask is like, would I post this if this was my child, right? Like, it just is really frustrating because it happens all the time. And I just think people don't think, right? Because now everybody has a pocket camera and they see a cute kid or they see something really cool, like kids just being kids in their own neighborhood playing football or soccer. I take like street photos all the time. And I also am starting this series of like mothers around the world. And I actually just take the backs of mostly the mothers or the faces of their children, if it's somebody that I'm directly talking to. And then if I'm chatting with somebody or if I'm like, hey guys, if I feel comfortable, I will ask if I can take a picture. And I've been told no before and I haven't fussed at them. And I smile and I would say, no problem, thank you, because that is their right. And I don't even know how to make people like consider that. Imagine if you were just in the park eating your sandwich and somebody came up with their long lens and took a picture and took a picture of you, or even just snapped with their cell phone, which seems more offensive than at least a professional camera. You're like, wait a minute, you need to ask me, but at least it's probably a good picture. But with somebody's random, you're just like curious of like, what do they want, right? And this even happens, you probably see this, Erin and Katie, like when you go into markets, right? Because markets are like, it's sensory overload. It's a lot of things that we're not used to, the spices, the fruits, the fish just hanging. We're not used to seeing just a raw chicken, you know, like the head of a pig and all of that stuff. Like I might sometimes have like my 360 camera going through a market, but if I have like a point and shoot kind of camera, I might shoot the things and I will always ask, can I take your picture or can I take a video? Because even sometimes people will say you could take the picture, but not the video, right? Like, and it's really their choice. It's just a human courtesy to ask. But back to the children, posting photos of children in care, it strips them of their own right to privacy and digital consent. And we're even seeing parents make this call, and we see the results of kids who had been online since they were little, you know, the content kids, and growing up, or they're like teenagers now, and they're talking about the horrors of having to be on all the time. And that's just in our own world. But these poor defenseless kids who we don't even know their full background situation of how they even ended there, some kind of trauma has happened. Even the least bit of being separated from your parents, and your parents are still alive, and they are, let's say you're 4 or 6, and they're telling you to go with Miss Anne over here for schooling. Your parents think they're doing the best that they can for you, but they hope to get back to you. That is still a bit of trauma to who knows what happened to them in the transport, and were they, you know, exploited or trafficked or molested along the way? We don't know, right? And so then now you're taking their photo and it's just kind of like more abuse. And then it actually turns this hard period in their life into the backdrop of somebody else's like fun or feel good moment.
They're being used almost as props, which is horrific. And I always, like, whenever I see this stuff online, like, I see it all the time on travel social media, like, people posting photos of, like, the kids they met in this orphanage and somewhere in East Africa. I just always wonder, like, do you know that child's name? Do you know where they are right now? Have you spoken to this child like since you last saw them? Mm. These are the things that I wonder. And like, obviously, I'm not going to comment and ask that. But like, I think about
this. I would. Now that you're saying, I was like, that feels like a
maybe good troll. I should be.
That's good trolling content. When's the last time you talked to them? What's their name?
It is so interesting to compare to like your regular social media posts, because like when I'm posting my own personal photos, even with people that I don't know super well, I feel a little uncomfortable putting like a photo of them out, or even like photos of my friends' kids.
I barely post my niece and nephew, even though I have full permission to. I just, on my private Instagram, I don't, because I feel that it's weird.
Yeah.
It is weird. Like, I have a 6-year-old nephew. The same thing. My sister is giving me full permission. She doesn't care. But we're in media, so we know like it really does matter. It just takes away their autonomy and their power and their own decisions. We don't know amongst those, let's go back to the orphan children, who's an introvert, who never, like, who has an insecurity. You know, like sometimes there's even deformities, and those are the ones who get photographed the most. And are they getting money for their photograph, like being put all around the world, you know, has 20 million likes because they're adorable with, let's say, green eyes, but they have a cleft, you know, a cleft palate. Like, what do they even get from it? So it really is just using them. But like what you said earlier, one of the things that is just like an exclamation point, children are not tourist attractions. You should not build your trip around that.
Yep. So I think most people want to do something good when they travel. I know that volunteerism feels like the simplest and most tangible way to do that. But as we've discussed today, it's something that generally you want to be very cautious of because these things can cause harm. So for those of us who do want to be having like a positive impact on our travels, like what are ways that we could give back that are a safer bet?
I think you could, first of all, when you are researching, you can support programs that bring families together. You can donate to NGOs that actually help parents keep their children at home. Economic support can look like buying local when you use local guides. You talked about earlier having a guide who took you through their neighborhood. Those are the best experiences. Those are the most authentic because it's their home. This is the most authentic and original way that people would travel and tour. And even if they make a special dinner or recreate something, but you had a local guide, like that is the direct transfer. We don't have any tourism leakage. You have permission. They're asking the questions. They're telling you, okay, we're going to go into a temple, put something over your shoulder. And they trust you too. And they're sharing their culture. And I feel like then you position yourself to share a bit of your culture with them. And it even can be in the form of just like playing cards. We did that one time. We knew we were going to do a homestay in Guatemala. And we spent time with this family who gave up their son's bedroom for us. And we helped them cook dinner while we were learning. And that's when it really sank home to me that they were just as curious as for these American girls as we were in their life. And so we brought them playing cards, and then we showed them some rules, and then we played, and their son had a kick out of that. Then you kind of research those kind of programs, the ethics of it, and it just takes a little more time. But I always say, like, people do one, when they're planning to travel, they do one round of research. But when you find something, look deeper, look to see who runs the organization, where is the money going, who is your on the ground guide. And then think about that saviorism complex, because if your on the ground guide, if your tour company doesn't hand you off to an on the ground guide, but where they're the ones to take you through it, how much do they really know about this community, right? So you're going to get a very sanitized version. We need to peel back more layers so that we make sure that our own personal experiences, that we're doing the best that we can do. And then expertise over ego. Only volunteer if you have a specific professional skill.
I was thinking about this myself because like I've never really looked at doing volunteerism because I've just always felt skeptical of it. But I have participated in beach cleanups in different places around the world. And I always tell people, like, if you want to do something good, like, that's a very easy thing that you can do. really anyone can do and is very appreciated in like most of the places I've been in the world.
And it's helpful, right? Like, yeah, do that, like instead of just painting the little wall that they're going to come back and paint over. Waste is a problem everywhere. And especially in tourist communities, that would be something that you could really do. Yeah, so there is a list that you can look up to see. But I think anything centering helping people, you should be skeptical of, because this positions you as captain, you know, I'm the savior. I think that's the biggest red flag, is like, we're helping people do what? Because we all know the best way to help people is finances. Like, and let them do it themselves. Let them get the groceries that they need. Let them plant the farms. So like, there are good initiatives out there, like the ones that do micro financing for businesses, women businesses, that we see those pop up all the time, and they're empowering the community and then they're selling their goods. And then, you know, if I'm out and I hear a story like that and some woman is trying to sell me her beads and stuff, and I know that she would only be able to do this for her family with that, I'm going to put the money in her hand and buy the beads, and I know that I'm helping her business. So like, there are ways to directly impact the community that you want to visit. And that is the number one thing to look at, is like, who are you impacting?
I'm curious your thoughts about I'm not going to name it, but you'll know what I mean. There is a platform built around traveling as a volunteer that you see a lot of influencers promoting. A lot of influencers are creating group trips with this platform. And they're not always like I've felt a bit mixed about it, because some of the trips are like, we're going to go help gardening on this farm in Portugal. Some of them are like volunteer positions like that. They don't always involve children or wildlife, which are the ones that like really the most alarm me. But I'm curious your thoughts about this. Like, do you think there are some volunteer positions that are okay? Or like, you know, when you go and you volunteer to like work in reception of a hostel, for example.
Yeah. And so like those kind of things, I feel like are fair. Like, I know one of the photographers that worked with me, I run a production company. He was in his early 20s. He didn't have money and he wanted to travel. And so he found these programs where he could, I think he dedicated like 3 weeks working, and he was really working. He showed the videos on his social media, and he's really working on this like farm, having a machete. They showed him how the machete, and they're like, okay, every day we're getting up at 5 and we're just cutting through this. That is actually really doing something. And like what you said, in exchange for me to stay an extra week in this destination, I'll volunteer at the reception of the hostel. I think that's fair trade for an exchange for the travel experience. So I feel like that is different than paying your money to pop into a program where you don't have the skill set. Back to the children, one of the things that cracks me up is like, we don't even have to do background checks for these programs. And so you're just letting anybody come. And what if somebody is like, you know, a PDF, you've exposed this child to even more trauma. So like, if you don't have the skill set for it, then don't sign up for it. But then also, there are things that are beautiful where it's like, we're going to do a surf camp, but on Saturday, we're going to clean the beach before we leave.
Whenever I talk to people about this too, I always say like, why is it that you need to go abroad to like do something good for people? There's a lot of volunteer positions, I can guarantee, like no matter where you are in the world, there's a lot of volunteering you could be doing in your own community. And often the volunteering you can do at home is more skills-based than any volunteering position you'll find abroad. So that's where it's like, you have to be a bit self-reflective. Like, why do I have this need? Like, why don't I feel this need to do this like at home when I arguably have more time to do it? Like, yeah, just something to consider.
That's the main question, right? Like, yeah. Why? Like, if you volunteer at the food pantry, you know, at least once a month, by month 6, they're expecting you on the 4th Saturday, and you're part of the family and you're part of the volunteer crew. And when they have their end of the year banquet, you're getting named it because you were able to be consistent enough instead of dropping into a place for a week, spending $5,000. That's how much that program in Ghana I was going to go was going to cost. So it was going to be $5,000.
The irony of it all, like, to me, is that, like, when you volunteer in your home community, you can have, like, long-term relationships with the people in the communities that you are engaging with. And, like, arguably, that would be more fulfilling.
Yeah.
Than spending a week in Ghana.
And $5,000.
Yeah.
To be dusty, yeah. Like, to be dusty and, like...
Yeah.
Not sleeping on the beds that we're used to, you know, like it's self-imposed suffering for you.
Don't even get me started. It's like cosplaying as like,
yes,
I'm like poor. It's so uncomfortable. I just.
It's cosplaying. Yeah, I can avoid a shower for 3 days and I'll just be dusty. My feet will be, you know, black from the dirt. Yeah. But it's for the greater good. And we're actually here to explain that it's actually not for the greater good. It actually causes a lot of harm. And here's the ultimate thing. Like, we do need people to understand this and stop supporting it so that it goes away. And then amplifying the things that actually help children. And if nobody's coming to the orphanages, hopefully they can be returned to their families and not trafficked even further. But the core of why it exists is because we want it. So we need to stop wanting it so that that industry can go away and we can actually use our disposable income that we set aside to help others in really impactful ways for disadvantaged communities.
Well, Davy, thank you so much for joining us. This has been a great convo. Where can people find you if they'd like to read your work or follow you online?
Well, on social media, I'm at Davy Sutton, DavyeSutton, on all social media. And then you can see my stories on written stories on Yahoo or travelwithdavy.com.
Thanks for listening to Curious Tourism. If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to share it with a fellow traveler. If you're feeling extra generous, you can leave us a 5-star review or support us on Patreon. Anything you can do to support the show will help foster meaningful change throughout the travel industry. Curious Tourism is written and hosted by me, Erin Hines, and it's produced and edited by Katie Lohr in Canada's Toronto area. If you want to reach out to us, check the show notes for all the info you need. Stay tuned for a new episode next month, and of course, stay curious.
Hey guys, Aaron Miller here from Armchair Explorer, and I just wanted to let you know that our new series is out now. We've got kite skiing across Antarctica, Aboriginal storytellers, and the craziest whitewater race in the world. We're going on a bucket list hike across Italy. We're going to the fjords of Norway in search of the Northern Lights and lots, lots more. Our goal is to take you on the trip of a lifetime every single week. You can find Armchair Explorer on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you're listening right now, and at voyescape.com.
Hi, I'm Pauline Frommer, host of the Frommer's Travel Podcast. We post new episodes weekly, detailing the kinds of money-saving tips and cultural insights that will make your trips richer without making you significantly poorer. We do so by interviewing real travel experts like TV host Samantha Brown, Frommer's authors from around the globe, and such public figures as Free Solo's Alex Honnold. It's a fun travel party. I hope you can join us.